You are now listening to The Brunch Babe. Welcome back to another episode of The Brunch Babe podcast. But most importantly, welcome to the mid-season finale episode. You guys, today marks the 7th reservation of the season. I am so excited that you're still showing up and showing out in your brunch fits. I hope to be with me, your host, editor, scriptwriter, producer, content creator, everything that goes into the podcast. But most importantly, your brunch extraordinaire, your brunch babe, me, Lorianne L.A. Stacy. Now, today we're taking a trip to Georgia Brown's for brunch. Now, I've had a chance to visit Georgia Brown's, and let me tell you something. They know how to fuck up an appetizer. I mean, that fried green tomato still has your girl in a chokehold. It was so good. They also know how to make a really good cocktail, and I appreciate them for it. Now, with a 6-course brunch menu, which comes with an unlimited omelet bar, yes, you walk up to the bar, tell them exactly what you want, throw it into an omelet, and it's delicious, it's good, and it's unlimited. Georgia Brown's is like walking into your Black Southern family's brunch. It's like walking into their home. You just know that they're going to take care of you. Between the jazz musicians and the friendly wait staff, it was easy to settle right in. The atmosphere is super inviting. And if you're in the mood for small plates, this is definitely the place to go to. Because after this, I also went for dinner. And like I said, their apps, their cocktails, spot on. Now, I am very happy that on our mid-season finale episode, y'all peeped how I tried not to say excited just then, right? I really can't get over how fast time has flown since season 3 started way back when until now. But your girl is happy. Your girl is excited, ecstatic, over the moon. We're going to come up with some more adjectives, y'all. I'm super happy to be joined by Tiffany Ferret. Tiffany is a public policy and education professional working and living in the Washington, D.C. metro area. In addition to the D.C. area, she's lived in New York City, just outside of Philadelphia, Bogota, Colombia, and is a proud native of Charlotte, North Carolina. Outside of her work fighting for racial justice, Tiffany loves to travel the world, write, spend time with family and friends, take fitness classes, and of course, enjoys great food. I absolutely adore Tiffany, so we're getting straight into this episode so you can be amazed by her too. Let's go to brunch. Okay, you guys, I don't even know where to begin. On top of the fact that, as I mentioned, Georgia Brown's was amazing, our waiter was so generous, offered us more than the menu claims with an extra side of biscuits with our first course, which I had the fried green tomatoes with herb cream goat cheese, and it was just so good. And that's just how I feel about our next guest, Tiffany. She is such a comfort and joy to be around, always goes above and beyond to make sure that you feel well taken care of. And if I had to give her one descriptor, I don't even know if I'd know where to start or one specific word. I just think she's all encompassing between her travels and her aspirations, her professional life, truly a Renaissance woman. Maybe that's the best word, Renaissance. Beyonce. Yes. So maybe it's best if Tiffany starts. I'll let you tell us. If you had to give us a little bit of appetizer, a sampling, who are you? Who would you say Tiffany is?
Well, first, thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to join this conversation. I really like what you said. I have never thought of myself as a Renaissance woman person, but I like that. I like to dibble and dabble in a little bit of everything. So professionally, I'm a public policy and education professional. I'm currently a senior analyst in DC working on early education issues. But in my personal life, I love to travel. I am currently keeping a very close count on my country count and states within the US because that, you know, that's a thing too. So travel is definitely something near and dear to my heart. And then I just love spending time with people. I am a little bit of an introvert now, but still extroverted enough where like spending time with people, especially my friends and family, is like my favorite thing to do. And then outside of that, I am an avid walker. I don't know if that counts, but it I just does. Love being outside and walking and hiking and exercise and just challenging myself in different ways that way. So that's a little bit about me.
I love it. Well, now I'm curious, what is your travel count? Like how many cities have you been or states you've been to and countries in the world?
Oh, well, okay. So I keep this really corny document, like this Word document called Tiffany Travels. And I started it a few years ago when I was living in Bogota, Colombia. And I have not updated it recently, but at last count, I think I'm at somewhere around like 31 states and 17 countries, somewhere around there. So want to definitely impressive. Expand that. Yeah.
Okay. Is your goal to hit all 50 states?
Yes. I definitely want to do all 50 states and I want to do at least 100 countries in my lifetime. So I have a ways to go, but I'm hoping a lot more life to live. So yeah, that would be my goal. There are, I believe, 170 recognized like countries in the world. And so I would love to go to as many as possible.
You know, that is such a dope goal. I feel like I need to put numbers on things because I'm just like, la, 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 la. But then I go back to the same places so often. I'm like, you're never going to move this number. Like,
yeah. Well, I go back too, because sometimes you find that if you go somewhere like, oh, it was great to go that one time, I don't need to be back. And that's okay too. You know, you're just tasting a little bit of world. So, yeah, I mean, numbers definitely hold me accountable of trying new places and wanting to be in different spaces and cultures. And I also love language. I'm a language person. I only speak two, but want to do that more. So numbers definitely hold me accountable.
And what's the second language?
Spanish, Espanol.
Okay. You know, that counts. That's real.
It does count.
It's a real language.
You know, it's common, more common here in the U.S. That it's spoken, and it's one of the most common languages spoken in the world. But I still find, like, you know, in the U.S., it's tough here because we just, a lot of us are English speakers, and that's it. And that, I mean, that's great. But I'm very proud of the time I put into learning the Spanish language and culture, different cultures within the Spanish speaking world.
Shout outs to you. I've been trying to learn Spanish for 100 years. Me and that language will never click. Shout outs to my people though, because like, I love it.
I can teach you. Soy profesora. So we can work it out.
If you're able to teach me Spanish, I will put my hats off. I would pay you for it because honestly, like, it's embarrassing at this point.
I got you. One day for sure. We got it.
Okay. So speaking of visiting places twice.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Georgia Browns. It was my first time, but I know you've been back before.
Yes.
Why did you want to highlight this restaurant? What makes it special?
Yeah. So I grew up in the South and I come from a very Southern family. My dad's family is from Charleston, South Carolina, and has been there for proudly over 200 years. And my mom's family, she grew up in the Bronx, but they're originally from Louisiana. So, you know, I have every sort of like Spanish, not Spanish, Southern. We were just talking about the language.
I know.
Southern. I have every sort of like Southern ness about me, and I grew up in North Carolina. So when I moved here to the DC area, I was really looking for like comfort food sometimes. I love trying different things, but I was really looking for places that just had my go-to food. And Georgia Browns was one of those places that someone took me. And I just love the food. I love the jazz brunch on Sundays. I think it's just so lively. It reminds me of home. It's so joyful. And so I love that. And I think that's what makes it special. It's one of the few places that I've come across in the DC area that has that vibe and that really stays authentic to the food and a lot of Southern culture. So I love that about it.
Yay. I am so happy that you brought me. It was such a good time. The jazz brunch really was exciting. I feel like they definitely engaged you. And y'all heard earlier, you know, here's the thing about Southern food. Like, there's some things that like we're all used to and know, but there's other things, like when I see fried green tomatoes on a menu, I'm like, I never really see this unless I go to a Southern place.
Yeah.
And so therefore I always order them because I'm like, this is the only time I'm getting them. So I just love it. So I'm really excited to dive deeper with you in this conversation, but we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back. Okay, y'all. So we are back. Now, we were just gushing over Georgia Brown's and all the amazing options that they have. Y'all know I'm super duper indecisive. So even though it was a 6-course menu and they're like, have what you want, I still was like, oh my God, I am struggling. And I was choosing, I think, between like the shrimp and the grits or like the fried catfish. I went with the fried catfish, y'all. I was just like, I got to break it up. I think I talk about shrimp and grits almost on every episode. I'm like, they get sick of me.
Yeah.
But point that I'm making is I feel like similar to the DMV, there's just always so much to do. There's so many neighborhoods, so much to explore. Even in the 2 years that I've been here, and it is such a small city, I still feel like I'm constantly discovering new things.
Yeah.
So thinking about your experience, Tiffany, what brought you to the DMV? Why have you stayed? Why do you call it home? What makes it special to you?
Yeah. So originally I came here for work. So I, like I mentioned, grew up in North Carolina, and then I bounced around for the next, I would say, 6 to 7 years. I went to undergrad in Pennsylvania. Then I moved to South America, moved to New York for grad school. And coming out of grad school, I really wanted to dive into the policy world, really get my feet wet, like have robust experiences professionally that I could always reference and draw upon. And DC is a place for that. DC is where a lot of, was where all of our federal government sits, and a lot of national state-based organizations and lobby groups and nonprofits and foundations. And so I got an opportunity to work at my previous job where I was for 2.5, almost 3 years. And I immediately jumped out at the chance coming out of grad school. So originally, like a lot of people here in DC, it was work that brought me here. And I've stayed over the last few years, mostly just, I think it's been an explosion for my career. And I've really appreciated that. I've learned so much and just grown so much as a professional. And then personally, I just had a lot of friends who were coming into the DC area. And like a lot of cities, it can be very transient, but having like a core community, even with some people being in and out over the last few years, has been so special to me and made it more homey. My brother recently moved here, so that was literally family here. And then my cousins live in Maryland, and my aunt and uncle. And so it's become special to me over time of just the bonds that I've been able to form with people here. And then also learning a lot more about the city. There were just so many things, especially historical things, I learned about DC that I didn't know before living here. And so it's been cool learning about all of that. And then also the weather is mild. So that's always good.
The weather's decent.
Yes.
Okay, so you said that career brought you here, obviously being in public policy and education. I'm curious about how you got in, how did you get on that journey? How did you make it into this field?
So I often tell people that where I am now professionally is probably the last thing I thought I'd be doing if it was even on my radar at all. So mostly through my childhood, I wanted to be a lawyer. I watched Law and Order growing up with my mom. I knew that as like, you know, one of the few actually career paths that I knew of. Mostly I was exposed to just like technical things or advanced professional careers, like lawyer, doctor, engineer. And so lawyer was it for me for a long time. And then when I got to college, I was like, I'm going to be in the English department and be an English major, and then that's going to set me up for law school. Hated the English department. No, I know. So sorry to the English department at my undergrad. I love my undergrad, but it just wasn't for me. And I felt that. And so I did this major called philosophy. I really had no idea what it was, but ended up falling in love with it and was still on this like law track until after college. I taught actually in South America, and I was already exposed to education systems in college through the Children's Defense Fund Freedom School Program. I did the program every year of college and then eventually became a national trainer in the program. And it's a very civil rights rooted organization generally, but the Freedom Schools in particular were founded, in the 60s, there was the Mississippi Freedom Summer Project. And college students came down to the South essentially to teach Black folks to read and other literacy skills so that they could vote. And so that is the basis of it. Now it's revamped as a program for children 5 to 18, but that was like my grounding before moving to South America. But I saw that a lot of the inequities, particularly for people of color and defined different ways in different countries, but indigenous communities, Black communities, people with low incomes, those inequities were the same and those structures were the same. And so I really wanted to kind of marry this law, public policy thing that I wanted to have with what I was experiencing and seeing. And so from there, I thought I'll put law school on hold for like a year. I'll do grad school, I'll finish early, and then I'll go to law school. And it just didn't shake out that way. I just got so deep in my program. Also, graduating in a year would have been a challenge, and I didn't want to do that to my mental health. I just got so deep in my program and what I was learning and the experiences I was having and what I was experiencing in terms of learning about the education system in New York City at the time. And so I decided that law school was not going to be the thing. My parents, I think, probably just got over it yesterday. But not going to law school. And so as I was exploring more and just exposed to different career paths, I knew that I wanted to merge those two things of really making an impact in policy to impact people's lives, especially around education. So that is how I got into it and really why I've stayed. That grounding has kept me.
That's so dope. Fun fact, y'all, because I don't know if I said already, but that's how Tiffany and I met.
Yeah.
Shout out to EPSA, Teachers College.
Teachers College, TC in the house.
No, it's interesting, I think, especially hearing people who've made it in education, but I think a lot of career fields, like, you start off in this way that is very unexpected. Like, I thought I was going to be a pediatrician. But the experiences that you have in college, right? For you working with students your whole entire time almost set you up for this, right?
Even
if you didn't see it in the moment. And it's something that I like to think about, like, where were those little signals or glimmers from, like, what you didn't realize in the moment, but has come to, like, affect you so much in the present.
Yes.
Okay. So you've mentioned to us several times, and I want to talk about it. Your family carries such a rich Southern traditions, right? Being from North Carolina. Can you share more about your lineage? How does that impact the work that you do where you are now? Like you said, your parents thought you were going to be a lawyer. I'm sure they were like, our Southern Belle is going to law school and look at you now.
They sure did. And I have not lived up to the expectation that they had every step of the way. I think it's worked out for the best. And they've adapted over time, bless their hearts. But you know, this wasn't the original plan for any of us. My family is really deeply rooted in the South. So I mentioned my dad's family is from Charleston, South Carolina. He was born there, my uncles, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, my great-great-grandparents. And so that is what I consider to be home. I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina, but my dad's family being there for so long, pretty much everyone on that side of the family has been born there. as far back as we can trace in this country. And so that has just kept me, I think, very grounded in who I am. It wasn't always that way. I think I went through the process of, as a child, really understanding what that meant and being somewhat different from my friends. I went to, for all of middle school, all of high school, mostly some, a little bit of elementary school, went to a K through 12, it was like pre-K through 12, majority white, independent private school in North Carolina, which carried a lot of stuff. It was a lot of things navigating that experience as typically one of the only Black children in my class, in my grade, you know, doing certain activities in certain classes, especially when I got to high school and I was on an AP track, and I grew up playing field hockey. And so being in the South and contending with the binary of in the South being Black or white, and there not being much gradation, but also within Blackness, not really understanding the various pieces of that too. Like my dad's family being from Charleston, you know, we have Geechee Gullah roots in that as well. And so not always having the space and the luxury, and as a child, the language to really understand what that means and how special that is, and how much I needed to just retain that and talk about it. And so as an adult, going to college and other places, it transitioned from the Black-white binary to, even within the shades of Black, of, oh, well, you're just American. You don't know where your family is really from. Because I had a lot of friends who were first generation from Jamaica, from Nigeria, from Cameroon, like all of these different places within the diaspora. And it became, oh, well, you know, you're just Black American. And not even really, again, extrapolating the Black American experience, which I saw in my household was even so different between my parents. Because my mom's family left with the Great Migration. They left Louisiana and settled in New York City, where my mom was born in Harlem, raised in the Bronx. And even seeing those culture clashes between my parents and my dad being, he is a Southern man. He is a Charleston Southern beau, I guess would be the, not a bell, but he's a beau.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I didn't even know that was like a thing, a phrase.
I don't know. And if it's not, here I am to create it. And my mom, you know, she, Southern life has changed her, I feel like, a bit. But, you know, coming to the South, she was this, you know, whip smart, fast talking, you know, Bronx, New Yorker. And so just understanding that and really wanting to carry that forward, I think as an adult, and understanding a little bit more, has impacted how I view my family now. And especially with, you know, my parents and the generations before them getting older and aging, and thinking about how I'm going to, you know, even if my children aren't also born in the South, carry those traditions down and speak about our family legacy, and know how unique it is as a Black American family to have so much history, over 200 years on my dad's side, that we can talk about pictures, records, Freedmen's Bureau, all of these things. And it's also impacted my work. I think that the reason why I got into ed policy was I always feel this sense of justice and morality and wanting to make an impact. And that's just something I think has been instilled in me from my family, but I've also taken on as almost part of my personality. And I feel that now that I'm learning so much more, it's changed the way I think about the work that I do, and even the work that I want to do, of how can I be the best agent of sharing Black stories in a positive way that's not from a deficit lens, that is joyful and uplifting, and, you know, how can I contribute to the rich legacy that I've been a part of in my own family, but also just as a Black American in this country and the various experiences we have across the world. So yeah, it's very rich, and it's, I feel like getting deeper into it, it's changed everything.
We'll be right back to our conversation shortly. And we're back. I'm curious about what that journey looks like for you, right? Like, it's something that you said you want to carry forward. Do you think it's something that you'll carry forward strictly professionally? Is it something for your own personal gain? What does that really look like for you? Have you had conversations with your family about, are there things that we need to be doing different to carry on our lineage? I know that for me, it's interesting, right? Like, my family's from Jamaica, and you mentioned that in terms of like identity. And I think identity is something that's like, it's fun. Identity is fun,
yes,
but it's also wild. And I feel like we're in a generation where everything is a lot more accessible and we're still figuring out what that means. And I think about like my grandmother, for example. My grandmother will not talk about her childhood. She will not talk about the past. And so there's a part of me that's like, how do some of these traditions go on when I don't have access to them? Or are there other ways for me to access them without, like, you know, forcing someone to bring up maybe things that they don't want to speak about, right? And so, yeah, I'm just curious because I feel like it has my mind is just going. I'm like listening and I'm like excited to see also the way that you light up talking about this. Yeah. And also, I feel like it can be a challenge sometimes.
I agree. It can be a challenge, but I think it is, if you can push past certain generational traumas and conversations, it can be so rewarding because I've found in my own life that it's helped me understand myself better. I think I have been on this journey over the last like decade since I left home for college of really trying to figure out who I am. Who am I? Take away school, take away the sports and activities I was a part of growing up, take away situational things and like people I've been around and circumstances, like take all of that away. And who am I really at the core? And I think it's like a lifelong journey, but I think part of that has been through learning more about my family and seeing where certain things come from or how I've picked up certain behaviors or even mindsets or things that I want to accomplish for my life. Are they really mine or are they things that I've heard or internalized over time? And one of the biggest things that has happened over the last several years is loss. So my dad is one of four, and we've lost two of my uncles within the last 3 years. And I think I always took for granted that everyone would always be here. And I would just eventually learn things or, you know, things would eventually happen. And I think seeing that pain and that realization through the eyes of my parents in particular really shifted how I want to do things moving forward and conversations that I want to have. So I think that opened up the space, at least for my immediate family, which is me, I have three siblings, and then my parents, for the six of us to really start having conversations. So even being more honest with my parents of like, I know you made this decision in our childhood, but I didn't like that. That did not serve me well. And my parents having to say, well, we weren't trying to hurt you. And it was like, I know, but I'm just letting you know now as an adult, as I've been able to reflect, that was not good for me. Mm. And that I think opened up the space to have even more conversations. And then it's, in my perspective, opened my parents up the last few years to be more honest about their childhoods or things that they've experienced or even things in their 20s, like, you know, I made this decision, but I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's something that I definitely want to do is opening up that communication. I think particularly coming from a Southern family, we can keep secrets. And a lot of that was for protection, thinking about the legacy of our enslavement and our oppression in this country of you had to keep things together sometimes. You didn't have the space to talk about your feelings. You were trying to get by day to day to make sure that you were not lynched or whipped or your family wasn't torn apart. And so I think that's something that I have been working on personally a lot, just pushing through that and trying to forge a new way for myself and the children that I hope to have one day. But it's also opened us up to doing things more as a family. So my mom just turned 55. She wants
shout out to mom.
To know. And even though it was somewhat last minute, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go home for the weekend. Even if it's just a couple days, I have the flexibility to work from home. So I'll just work in North Carolina. Spent time with her. Our whole family was there. My dad and I recently traveled together to Egypt and are working on sharing more of our family story through a project that we did there. That, I think, was an opportunity that came to us, not because it wasn't something that we would have accepted in the past, but I think it like divinely came to us at the time that it did, because we were finally in the space to have these sort of conversations with each other, be comfortable, and really be in the space to travel together as like a father-daughter duo and to trust each other in that way. So it's really, I think, impacted all facets of who I am as a person, not just my work, but who I'm becoming and how I'm starting to navigate the world and even my family.
It's refreshing to hear you speak about this, because I think it's been interesting, right? Like, I talk about this a lot. Like, I've been in therapy for the past maybe like 5 years, and it's interesting to see what patterns and behaviors remind you of your parents, what patterns and behaviors you want to break, what things you want to address. And I don't know, I come from a Caribbean household. I think a lot of my Caribbean friends might agree. Our parents don't apologize. That's not something that they do, right?
Black Southern ones don't either.
Right? Like, they're more likely to be like, all of a sudden it's like, okay, here's dinner.
Yep.
I bought you a dress. Okay. Like, well, actually, you hurt my feelings, and what I really want is for you to say sorry. It would have saved you time and money.
Most importantly, money.
Most importantly. So I think even just listening to you speak about like how, you know, you've taken that into your hands about opening those pathways to communications has allowed you to like open your relationships in new ways, mm-hmm. and create opportunities in new ways, including opportunities for travel, which I think is just amazing. Could you tell us what's maybe one of the most impactful places that you've had a chance to travel to, whether it be on your own or with your family?
It was just a different experience. So I traveled with him because in the last few years, you know, losing family members, and even prior to that, losing my grandparents, was really hard on my dad and his surviving brother. And so they started just putting family history together, because they were like, we need to just account for who's here and who has been here. And we just want to put together family history. So my uncle's really been leading the charge, and my dad's been supporting him, and I've been involved as, I feel like, their junior assistant. And I've started to speak about this a lot more and speak about how this relates to my travel when I'm in Black spaces in particular. So several years ago, I went to West Africa for the first time. Someone who actually also went to TC, she has a travel company. And so we went to Togo, where she is from, Ghana and Benin, the first trip. And then the second trip, switched out Benin for Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast. And that was amazing. I mean, I had never been to the continent before. And I went twice. Like, I went 1 year and then I went back the next year. It just changed my whole perspective on everything. I think it's different being in Black spaces in the US than it is being on the continent. And so that was like one thing that opened me up, right? And was impactful. And I think it opened and gave me the space for the work that I am supporting my dad and my uncle with and want to be more involved in. So I spoke about that experience. Someone saw that and were like, hey, we're doing stories about families and family healing and understanding identity through your family identity through travel. And so yada, yada, different iterations of it. But then the final was me and my dad going on this trip to Egypt to really, it was almost like a research methodology of how my dad and my uncle were putting together our family history and story in the US, being able to access different records and things like that, to learn about Egyptian families, and especially with the Nubians being one of the earliest ancient civilizations of Black people in what's known as the cradle of civilization of Egypt. And basically, yeah, learning that and applying that to what we want to do here. So they were putting the story together. We jumped at the opportunity. And in February, we were able to travel to Egypt and experience so much of the country. And it was impactful for a lot of ways. Egypt was always on my bucket list of like icebreakers at work when it's like, what's the one place you want to travel to? Mine was always Egypt. And I even took an Egyptology course in college my senior year when I was at the point where I just needed to take electives to graduate. And when I tell you I was front row, every class, getting A's on all the assignments because I just loved it so much and I was so engrossed. For me, that was just always the place, right? And it was even more impactful because I got to travel with my dad. And it was his first time traveling out of the US, his first international trip. Okay. We were traveling together. We both got to go to this place that we both always wanted to go to and just saw so much. I mean, we spent an afternoon on the Nile River, which is significant in a lot of ways. I think for me, you know, being a person of faith, it was very significant. It was just significant as one of the largest, longest, vast bodies of water in the world. And just everything that we got to see, there was such an emphasis on family there, from how people interacted with each other in the markets and family businesses and even the performance art. There was on stage a father who he was teaching his son this traditional dance through them performing it together, because you could see the son learning. And that was just an incredible experience. So, I mean, a lot of places have impacted me. Yeah. But short answer, this recent trip to Egypt.
Super dope. I mean, getting to the continent, specifically Ghana, is on my list. And yeah, I just feel like it'll be one of those things very similarly, like it's a chance to learn about yourself. You know, I did 23andMe back in college when they were trying to collect Black people's DNA. I do think y'all should stay away from those things. It's kind of scary, but you know, they serve their purposes in the moment. But, you know, being of like Jamaican heritage, like a lot of our ancestry goes back to Ghana. Yes. And I was just like fascinated. And I'm like, I want to go here. I want to see the roots in the beginning. And like you said, it feels like for me, another way to access in terms of identity and family and just understanding more about the world and where I'm from. So yeah. I'm super, well, I'm super jealous, but also
don't be.
Super excited that you've had those opportunities, right? Because it seems like you've been very intentional and thoughtful in the way that those have come into your life.
Yeah.
So I know that you're up to everything. As I mentioned at the top of the podcast, this is a Renaissance woman, y'all. She is a humble, humble lady. But when you think about the future and the things that you aspire for yourself, your family, obviously plays a deep part in who you are, your community, the work that you do, like what is the kind of, I guess now the impact that you want to make?
I just want to make the world a better place for my people. If I could just say it simply, I think for the last 5 years almost that I've been, 5 years that I've been in DC, it's been through the policy space and shifting things so that there are laws and precedents that reflect our experiences and our stories and to make things better for us in that way. I think where I want to go next is travel has always been a big part of my life, but also low-key writing. I write a lot. I research a lot on my own through travel, like places that I go. I'm always constantly taking notes, going to every museum possible known to humankind and seeking out other experiences. But that is something that I want to do more intentionally moving forward. I don't, hopefully my job doesn't hear this. Well, they know, but I don't go in the specific policy space forever. I think it gives me a very good grounding and insight to the US and to where we need to go and what needs to change and transform. And being able to root that in being able to tell our stories better to talking about specific points or events that have happened and kind of break down how we got to where we are now because of those things, or just how they impacted Black people in general. So I definitely see a lot more writing and traveling in my future. And just through that, or through any gifts that I already have, just make it better for us. And also to connect Black people around the world. That's been something that's been really important for me recently.
I love it. Okay, so we are getting a little bit towards the end of our main course. Thank you for diving in deep about your family and your heritage and the work that you're doing. Is there anything on the horizon that people should be aware of or look out for from you? What's coming up?
Yeah, so definitely the project that my dad and I were involved in. There is being a story written about it now, should be out by the time of this broadcast. So you can certainly check it out. It's the story about our trip to Egypt through not only like a narrative article, but also through photos and documentary video as well. So you can definitely look out for that. Very excited about it. I'm very proud of the work that we did and how we worked with the team there. And then you can always find my work through the organization where I work, which is the Center for Law and Social Policy. And I'm constantly writing about Black children and families. So you can find a lot of my work there and some of the upcoming conferences I have in the policy space coming up.
I love it. Okay, perfect. So you guys, we're going to take a quick break before we come back for a little bit of dessert. You guys know I'm not a real dessert person. I try every time I go to brunch and, you know, one day I'll get better. But I just have to shout out Georgia Brown because they gave us a sampler. A really good sampler, I thought. There was bread pudding, banana pudding, brownies, I think a blondie, red velvet cake. And, you know, the banana pudding was my favorite. Maybe because it's the one that I could eat. Two of them did have nuts in it, so it's fine. But I love asking for a dessert menu. I'm always struggling to figure out what to choose. And now I didn't have to. I got all five. So I was super excited about that. So I just want to mention it because that feels like our conversation today. I came in like, Tiffany, be on my podcast. And she's like, I'm giving you family. I'm giving you Southern heritage. I'm giving you travel to the continent of Africa. I'm giving you community, like everything. I appreciate you, Tiffany. So to wrap it up today, what is it one thing, if people take anything away from this conversation?
Never stop telling your story. Because if you do, someone else will tell it. And it won't be accurate. And just want to also leave folks with a poem that has always really kind of spoken to me. I first read it in the book Copper Sun by Sharon Draper, which I highly recommend. And I read this book and shared it out with students through my work with the Children's Defense Fund Freedom Schools. Can I read a little bit of it to you?
Please, yes.
Okay. So I pulled it up. So the poem is called Heritage by County Cullen. And I first, as I mentioned, came across this in the book Copper Sun by Sharon Draper. So it always allows me to reflect on my own heritage and identity. So the first stanza is, what is Africa to me? Copper sun or scarlet sea? Jungle star or jungle track? Strong bronze men or regal black? Women from whose loins I sprang when the birds of Eden sang, 1-3 centuries removed from the scenes his father loved, spicy grove, cinnamon tree. What is Africa to me? So that's the first stanza of the poem. And I highly recommend folks to check it out and just reflect on yourself and your heritage and why and how you are.
Yes. Yes. I think reflection is important. Identity is important. Constantly asking ourselves why. Oh, thank you so much. So if people want to keep track of what you're up to, yeah, they want to follow you anywhere, where can they find you? Plug all the social media, let them know.
Yes. So if you want to find my work, my Twitter is the best place for that. I use it strictly for work purposes and sharing all the work that I do in the policy space. My Twitter is TJFERRETTE, Ferrette, which is my last name. So at TJ Ferrette is my Twitter. And then for all the fun stuff, all the travel, everything else, you can find me on Instagram. My Instagram is Tiffany, but it's spelled TYPHANY. JANEE. So Tiffany Janae is my first name, last name, but the Tiffany is TYPHANY JANEE on Instagram.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us, Tiffany. It's been a pleasure.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. This has been great.
Oh man, you guys, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Brunch Babe podcast and to the first half of season 3. Usually it would be 8 episodes and move on, but I told y'all at the start, I was challenging myself to lengthen the season and we're doing just that. Woo! New episodes of the Brunch Babe podcast will drop at the end of summer, so stay tuned. In the meantime, you can catch me across all social media at the LA Stacy, that's Stacy with an EY, and the podcast on Instagram at the Brunch Babe Podcast. And if you're following, you would know that this week is my birthday. And what better birthday gift to give me than to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast, and leave a written review on all the things you've enjoyed so far about season 3. Now I get it. Sometimes writing things is work. Fine. If you don't feel up for a review, I will also take my birthday gift in the form of you sharing your favorite episode and tagging me. Regardless of how you choose to engage, you'll continue to find content from my brunch outings and clips of past and future episodes across the social media platforms. Now, if you find yourself having something to say to me offline, if you want to see your favorite spot featured, if you know an amazing Black woman or woman of color, you can always reach out to me through email. It's lathebrunchbabe@gmail.com. I know that I'm saying this for the thousandth time this episode, but I really, really can't get over the fact that we're here. I'm super excited to continue to bring you more great interviews and more great episodes when I return later in the season. In the words of our lovely guest, Tiffany, never stop telling your story. And if you ever find yourself in need of a good story during our downtime this summer, don't worry. You can always go back and catch up on all your favorite episodes featuring the slew of amazing Black women and women of color, from writers to designers to publishers to entrepreneurs to scientists, and the list goes on, that I have featured and will continue to feature when the season comes back. So mark your calendars for new episodes in August. And until then, happy brunching, babes.